Good evening, all. Welcome to the Tuesday, November 17, 2020 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Can you all hear me? Thank you for nodding. Join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for
all. Thank you. Roll call members.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison?
Here.
Rich John? Anna Kellis?
Anna is here. She just joined us.
Anna Kellis? Go back to her. Dan Klein?
Here.
Ann Corman?
Present.
Blaine?
Here.
Dave McKenna?
Here.
Glenn Morey?
Here.
Martha Robertson?
Here.
Anna Kellis?
Here.
We have Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Present.
13 members present.
Thank you. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. You would have gotten any notices and communications in your mailboxes or via email. I have one proclamation tonight that I am happy to entertain from this legislature. And before I read the proclamation real quickly, I want to let you all know that there's a gathering of unity tonight. Today is the day of remembrance for our transgender citizens. And so I will read the proclamation. And here to accept the proclamation is Vanessa Taylor. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Leslyn. Thank you.
Proclamation. Whereas Tompkins County has been committed to ensuring all residents are afforded equal opportunity to enjoy a full and productive life and to ensure the rights of all residents to make their own choices, follow their own beliefs, and conduct their lives as they see fit, are protected. And whereas Tompkins County was one of the first counties in the state of New York to pass Local Law No. 6, 1991, amended in its entirety in 2004 as Local Law No. 1, 2004, commonly known as Local Law C, protect against discrimination based on gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation. And whereas more lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer plus residents, LGBTQ plus residents, and specifically members of the transgender community of Tompkins County are living openly more than ever before. And whereas local and international members of the transgender community are on occasion subjected to violence directly attributed to transphobia, hatred, or a lack of understanding of what transgender means. And whereas the Human Rights Campaign reports an average of 22 transgender people are senselessly taken from us every year in the United States. Over 150 lives lost due to these senseless acts between 2013 and 2019, and the Trans Murder Monitoring Project has reported an average of about 300 senseless transgender deaths every year worldwide. And whereas in 1999, Transgender Day of Remembrance was established with a candlelight vigil to mark the November 1998 murder of Rita Hester, a trans woman from Massachusetts that began as a web-based project called Remembering Our Dead and Candlelight Vigil, and has today evolved into this annual day of remembrance. Ms. Hester's death murder has never been solved. And whereas Transgender Day of Remembrance is a worldwide celebration taking place each year on November 20th to honor those in the transgender community who have been senselessly lost. And whereas in 2020, for the first time, the Kernel University LGBT Plus Resource Center, Ithaca College Center for LGBTQ Resources, and the Ithaca Transgender Group are collaboratively hosting a candlelight vigil and have extended an invitation to all members of the community to join them for this online Transgender Day of Remembrance vigil on Thursday, November 19th, 2020. Now, therefore, I, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby call upon all members of our community to join me in honoring those members of the transgender community who have been senselessly taken from us over the past year, and renew our commitment and actions to eliminate prejudice everywhere it exists. And do hereby proclaim Friday, November 20th, 2020, as Transgender Day of Remembrance in Tompkins County, signed the 17th day of November, 2020. Thank you, Vanessa, for bringing this to our attention, and thank you for the details that helped populate this proclamation.
Very well.
Would you like to say something? Go ahead.
Mostly I would just say thank you very much. I know that I speak for all the people in the transgender community here in Tompkins County, as well as the people I'm working with at Cornell and Ithaca College to put Transgender Day of Remembrance candlelight vigil together, that we're truly gratified and honored that the legislature would see fit to issue a proclamation honoring the day. If anyone is interested in attending the vigil, it's this Thursday evening at 7 p.m., and there's a very simple website address. It's a bit.ly address, bit.ly/TSNThomas, D as in David, r, and then 2020. And the event will be live streamed over Zoom, and there will be opportunities for people who are attending via Zoom to chat in the comment section, very similar to the meeting you're having now. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Vanessa. Thank you for sharing the information, and we will make sure that this proclamation gets to you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And certainly we want to remember and respect those in our transgender community, as the proclamation says, who died at the hands of senseless violence because of who they are. So thank you. All right. Don't have any other proclamations announced. We will have an executive session this evening for the purposes of discussing real estate negotiations as well as personal issues related to a specific person. Do I need to reorder any business? No, I don't see any staff. Privilege of the floor for the public. Is there anybody?
We had one person that expressed an interest, but he has not joined us yet. So.
Okay. All right. Privilege of municipal officials. Do we have any municipal officials with us tonight? I didn't see anyone. I hardly see. Did everybody take off early for Thanksgiving? Is that what's going on? No ducks in? No. All right. And privilege of floor for legislators. Deborah.
Thank you, Leslyn. I'd like to thank the 45,000-plus people who turned out to vote in Tompkins County. But more importantly, as a former poll worker, I'd like to thank the approximately 300 people, both paid and volunteers, who staffed the early voting facilities for the 9 days of early voting, who spent 16-plus hours of Election Day working the polls, who counted the 12,000-plus absentee ballots that had to be counted after Election Day. Without those poll workers, we wouldn't have an electoral process, and you are too often not thanked for the very hard and important work that you do. Thank you.
Thank you. Amanda.
Yeah, thank you. Just wanted to let my colleagues know and anybody who is watching that we are going to be, starting in January, having a new poet laureate. Our current poet laureate, Melissa Tuckey, her term is coming to an end at the end of this year. Leslyn has long sat on the Community Arts Partnership Committee that has worked through nominations. She has asked me if I would like to be that person going forward, which is great. So anybody can nominate a poet. A poet can nominate themselves. If you know of someone, you can contact Community Arts Partnership directly. I think there's a few criteria that a person needs to have, and the term is for 2 years, and as you all know, it is an unpaid position. So, but it's a good position to have, and we look forward to whoever might be our new poet, and we will invite them in January to come introduce themselves. So that's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda, and I hope our current poet laureate will be able to come and close out our year as well. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank Vanessa for accepting the resolution. I'm just going to read it a little bit from the Human Rights Campaign website, and they say that sadly, they track people. They track a lot of different statistics for LGBTQ+, including the number of people who are transgender who have been killed that we know of. And so they say, sadly, 2020 has seen at least 36 transgender or gender nonconforming people fatally shot or killed by other violent means, the majority of which were Black and Latinx transgender women. Since HRC began tracking this data in 2013, they have never seen such a high number at this point in the year. These victims, like all of us, are loving partners, parents, family members, friends, and community members. They worked, went to school, and attended houses of worship. They were real people, people who did not deserve to have their lives taken from them. And so the of the 36 people, I just wanted to read just about one of them, if I can find this person again. Just a second here. Her name was Brayla Stone. a 17-year-old black transgender girl who was found killed in Little Rock, Arkansas on June 25th. She was a child just beginning to live her life, a black girl, a person who had hopes and dreams and plans and community. So thank you for everybody to keeping remembrance. And if you want to read the names, it's on the HRC website, and it's very important to say their names. Thank you.
Annie, thank you so very much. Rich John?
Yeah, thank you, Anne, for bringing that up. You know, we are a community, and we have to do everything we can, especially when we're going through so much turmoil, it seems, to recognize that there's so much more work to be done. And with that in mind, I'm happy to provide some news to the legislature and our viewers that from the Industrial Development Agency, last June, the governor passed or signed a new law into force where the IDA can do small grants. And we set up a program to authorize grants for daycare providers, particularly to respond to the COVID epidemic. And we had four applicants. We did our first round of grant approvals. We issued a little over $33,000 to local daycare providers to buy PPE equipment and to do improvements to their facilities to make sure that they were doing proper air exchanges. A lot of the money is going towards air cleaners and HVAC system improvements to make the spaces as safe as possible for the children. Obviously, if we want to keep our economy running, we need to have our schools open and we need to have daycare. And I was really happy we could do something to help in a small way, but a meaningful way to help make that happen. So good news from that front. Thanks.
Thanks, Rich. That's definitely good news. Martha.
And just to piggyback on that there's still some money left in the fund. I think what the total already spent was about $33,000, Rich. Is that right?
Correct.
The total available is 100, so 70. What's the math? 67,000 still available. Maximum grants of 10,000. So thanks for mentioning it, Rich.
Yep.
Thank you. So let's get the word out. Anyone else? So I will share very quickly that this Friday. Yes, this Friday is GX annual Harvest Festival dinner. We are not going to let COVID stop us from providing a meal to the community. Unfortunately, we all know we can't gather like we normally do and have an eat at BJM, but you're welcome to call GF or visit our Facebook page. Website and order a meal, they are to go. So we'll have it all ready, touchless handoff. We'll put it in the trunk of your car or wherever. You can drive off and go enjoy the meal. And while you're enjoying the meal at the same time, we will run a short harvest dinner program on YouTube. So you can still feel like you're part of the larger community, enjoying the meal and performances and so on. So please, everyone out there, get your meals ordered, I would say, by end of day tomorrow. So we have a good number. We're up to about 400 meals right now. You know, our plan is to share 600 meals to the community. And you can walk up and get a meal, but know that it will take a while for us to package it. So We prefer that you order it in advance. So please feel free. That meal is free to anyone in the community. It's completely paid for by one of our local financial institutions, Chase Bank. It's their sponsor this year for it. All the turkeys were cooked by Wegmans, so no, I did not cook any turkeys. Everything safely done and ready for our community to partake with all the other trimmings that go. Maxi Supper Club, just a shout out to them as a local business providing all the cornbread and many other businesses. So support our local businesses and come by and get a meal on Friday, a Thanksgiving harvest meal, harvest dinner.
Awesome.
Yes, Mike.
One of the treasures we have in Tompkins County are our community banks that that do lending locally, provide banking services locally. You think of the trust company, you think of First National Bank of Groton, you think of the First National Bank of Dryden. First National Bank of Dryden was headed up by the president, Ronald Denniston, for many years. He worked in that bank for over 40 years. And unfortunately, he's passed away here a couple of weeks ago. I just wanted to mention it, that he was one of those people that worked behind the scenes to try to make our community better. He was the the vice president of the Southworth Library Association in Dryden, and provided a lot of help and financial advice for that institution. It's sad when we lose important members of our community, but I want to bring that to everyone's attention. Thank you.
Thank you so very much for sharing and for remembering him. Anyone else? Okay. We don't have any special topics or presentations tonight, and Amanda took my chair's report, but I'll reiterate just to say, since the start of the Tompkins County Poet Laureate, I've sat on the selection committee as a legislator with members, other members of the community, former laureates, and members of CAC. I know this is something that's near and dear to Amanda's heart, and I grudgingly, it's one of the things that I just really love to do as an artist myself. It's just been so enjoyable and perhaps one of the least stressful of legislature assignments that I have engaged in. And so I am appointing Amanda and asking her to serve as the legislator on the selection committee for our next Poet Laureate. And hopefully that will rotate people through for those who might be interested, you know, after a few years to participate. Mike?
I think having the Poet Laureate is a wonderful thing that was actually started by Stu Stein. It was his idea years ago.
Yeah.
It's been carried through. Amanda's done a great job promoting it here for us. One thing I would really like in the criteria for the Poet Laureate is to ask the Poet Laureates to write a poem about Tompkins County, perhaps each year of of their term, and leave it to them. You know, there's a whole world here in Tompkins County, but I think it would be kind of fun if we had something. The Poet Laureates tended in England to always would write poems about the king or the queen back then. We don't need anything like that, but we need something to talk about our lake or our people or our society or whatever that the poet likes. But I think it'd be fun to ask that to be a part of the criteria.
Sure, we'll make sure that gets passed on because I think the criteria is just being developed as we speak or finalized. So we'll let people know. That's great. Well, thank you. Anything else before we move on? All right. Moving right along. Reports from County Administrator, County Attorney, and Finance Director. Before Jason starts, I just want to say I don't feel very well, so I might duck out early from this meeting. So if you see me disappear, Shauna is here, Vice Chair Shauna, and she'll take over. Oh, thank you. Jason, go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you, Leslie. We have our typical, not a typical, our usual update. I'll share the screen with you on COVID. Been active the past week and a half since our last meeting, so let me talk a little bit about what we've been doing. Everybody can see the Tompkins County response, COVID-19, typical format that we've had. Again, as you can see down here, we've continued and have a continual chronological order of everything since March, since we started doing this April 7th, but we go back to really the first response in March. If you haven't taken a look at it, I encourage you to do so. It's pretty interesting to see the history. Since the last time we met, we've had roughly 160 additional cases. Right now we have 135 active cases. For a total positive cases from the beginning is about 814, 678 active right now. So it's been a busy past week, week and a half or so with some increased caseloads. Again, some new guidance coming out. Probably the most notable is the restrictions on restaurants, gyms, and bars closing at 10 p.m. That came in effect last Friday on the 13th. And also keeping residential gatherings to 10 people. And this is following what we've seen across the state, as well as the nation, but increased positive cases as a result of gatherings of different types. And that's what this attempt to do is to restrict that a little bit further so we don't have as many exposures. As far as partners and operations, we've had a few announcements. Teaburg schools are going remote for the rest of November due to some exposures and some positive cases. Ithaca College talks about coming in and its move-in schedule for the spring. We issued some holiday guidance to our staff as well as publicly just went out today. And then Cornell went to alerted level of yellow with respect to some of its positive caseloads. We've had some public exposures that we've done, press releases on, also the 30 cases we had last week. In one day, we had a good, well-attended town hall. Thank you, Martha. We had a great turnout. People continue to watch the video, which I think is well-received, so it was a great turnout for that. We did issue the guidance today for holiday gatherings, and Leslin, All Things Equal radio program, great show today. Appreciate participation in that. You've seen this slide before. This is kind of our summary slide, COVID hours. Again, 50,000 hours worked, more than almost 51,000 hours worked from March just on COVID, over 1.6 million in payroll, another 51,000 in OT, another 235,000 in comp time. Comp time is earned but not paid out. As you can see, we still have some folks taking advantage of some of the family's first coronavirus leave, primarily related around child care challenges. And also we've had what we concluded in here is public health assistance. So for the past few weeks, we've had staff reassigned and doing different shifts at the public health department to assist with contact tracing. We've upped that as of recent and will continue to assign staff as needed, but a total of 31 individuals not public health department related, a total of over 1,000 hours, 200 plus overtime hours, and about $74,000 worth of overtime. So combined, you know, almost a full entire year's worth of one person's work related to additional contact tracing effort through other staff that have been reassigned to the public health department. And then COVID-related expenses, just under a million for the year so far. Frank, I'm going to pass this on to you to talk about our new holiday gathering guidance and our new icon.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah, so you see here the newest icon that the Public Information Group has developed, asking folks to stay home for the holidays. We understand that it's going to be different than normal, but we are strongly discouraging all travel and non-essential gatherings. Really what that means is we're asking folks to celebrate the holidays with the folks that they normally live with. Those small groups are essentially the folks that they're around all the time, and we don't want to bring others into that grouping in order to limit the potential for additional exposures. The governor, by executive order, has limited gatherings to no more than 10 people at private residences. But really, what we're asking folks to do is think about their household and who's normally with them, and have that be the group that they celebrate with in person this year. Now we're jumping into the data. It's a demographic presentation for this meeting. I think the running theme that you will find here is that there hasn't been a lot of significant change in any of the demographic numbers. And in fact, we seem to be in a lot of instances moving closer to the census for those particular demographics. So this is the age range, and that pretty much holds true here, just small percentages moving between the age groups. This is the race slide. Again, very similar. Just to point out, a reminder, the red numbers are what we reported last time we reported these numbers to you, and that was with 526 cases. Now we're at 808 total. So the red number is where we were last time we reported. So again, as you can see, minimal movement in these race categories. Ethnicity, similar, very small percentage shifts across the board. It's continuing the theme of pretty much holding steady at where we were. Obviously, our municipality map, with the significant increase in cases, the numbers have increased across the county, with what we would expect, the most densely populated areas of Ithaca, the city and town, as well as the surrounding areas being our highest case locations. And then source of exposure continues to be close to 50-50 split for the last month and a half, which means we're having some success with quarantining folks and finding cases connected to known exposure points. And then we still have significant community spread because folks aren't able to identify for us, and we don't have a direct link to a known exposure point. So there's definitely still community spread, and we would encourage folks to continue to take precautions because of that.
Amy, you want to take this one?
Sure. I'll take it. So this slide, actually, we're going to update. There's an increase calculation in this slide that wasn't updated in this presentation Jason's sharing, so we will update that. What we are seeing is there's been a slight increase in testing it increased again this past week. And that's where there's the error in the weekly cost. We're more at the 500,000 level is the cost, but the total cost. So everything but the totals are correct. I will send you the updated spreadsheet so that you all have that, including the FEMA reimbursement and our total cost, so we can keep track. What it does tell us when it has those updated numbers is, as we suggested, I think last time, is that we are probably, with what the legislature has allocated, we probably have about, I would say, 13 to 15 more weeks of funding available at the current pace. As that continues to increase, we'll look at that, but at this time, that's where we're at.
That's it, I think. Sorry.
Yep.
Okay. Questions? Mike Lane.
Just wondered if you could bring us up to date on our college, Tompkins Corlett Community College. Are they now back to in-person classes?
answers to that.
I don't believe they are.
We don't think they are, Mike, but I don't know for certain. We'll have to double check on that.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Again.
Devine and Corman.
Thank you. So I had one question that's been floating on Facebook as to when and how people get notified after they get a COVID test. So, for instance, some people have been saying, well, you only get a call if you had symptoms. Otherwise, you have to look on the portal. So just wondering if you have any clarification on that. Does everybody get a phone call or not? I guess would be the main question.
No, I think the folks that are getting phone calls are generally those that are testing positive. Others are being directed to the portal for their results.
And that's only the CUGA testing sites. There's a lot of variations to testing outside of the CUGA medical sampling site. So if they're going to their doctor's offices or
right.
other places, it would be a very different process too.
Okay, so that's a change because before everybody was getting a call.
Well, it changed a while ago just because the sheer volume went up. Initially, when we were doing testing, we were telling people to stay home until they got their results. So there was the necessity to call everyone and let them know their results. Now, only folks that are symptomatic are being told to stay home or should be told to stay home. And so the positive result calls are being made and everyone else is being directed to the portal for results if you go through the mall.
Okay, so there is some confusion. So if you don't mind relaying that to them, some people think they're still supposed to be getting a call and people are waiting, I guess, and they don't, I guess they don't understand, I guess. Not everybody does.
Sure, we'll relay that.
I know others are waiting, but Frank, may I just ask you to repeat something quickly that you said? If you're not symptomatic, you don't have to stay home
Correct.
After you've been tested?
So if you're going for testing to get tested and you're not symptomatic and you've not been told you're a close contact and placed in quarantine, you don't have to necessarily stay home for that test, right? The requirement to stay home is if you're symptomatic or if you were a contact of a known case. We would encourage people, if they have a concern and that's why they went to get tested, that they should stay home. But the requirement is really around if you're symptomatic or if you've been a close contact to a case.
Okay, thank you. Deborah Dawson.
Thank you, Leslie. Jason, you had a slide early on in the presentation that you broke down all the monies we've expended, and you had close to $1 million in COVID-related costs. Is that a figure that we're going to seek FEMA reimbursement for, and does that include the surveillance testing costs?
We are going to seek FEMA reimbursement for the expenses. The staff and labor piece, we probably won't be able to submit all of it. Amy, can you speak to if that $920,000 includes the testing?
Yes, I can. It does include the testing.
Okay.
And as far as TC3, I did just get that update. They are in session right now, but they are going remote after Thanksgiving. So they have about a week left before they go remote again.
So that's in person?
Yep, they're in person.
Thanks, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
Shauna, Henry, Martha.
I just had a question and was wondering if you could provide some clarity on, I know that we are discouraged from traveling for the holidays, but I also realize that there will be people that probably will, and wanted to see if we could get some clarity on if you travel within the contiguous states, if you stay for less than 24 hours, is there testing required to come back? And then if you could break it down, if you stay between 25 and 72 hours, and then if you stay more than 72, because I think it gets jumbled and a bit confusing.
Shauna, you said within the contiguous states. Do you mean outside of the contiguous states?
No, I mean actually the ones that are not on necessarily on the quarantine list. I guess I'm just trying to...
New Jersey.
Yes.
And the others. So there isn't a requirement for anything when you if you're traveling within the contiguous state.
Okay, so there's no quarantine, there's no testing guidelines for that travel. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so for everyone else that might be traveling to other states that aren't are considered quarantine, can you talk about the time frames as well as the testing guidelines? And I know you just mentioned the fact that if there's no contact or if you're not symptomatic, then you can test. I guess my real question is, if it's, for example, a child that's traveling to Florida, once they come back, would that child need to stay home from school until they have the test results back?
Correct. So there is travel guidance related to states that are not contiguous to New York. So there's four contiguous states, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Vermont. I hope I got my geography right. Any travel outside of those four states, either leaving New York and going there and then coming back or being there and coming to New York, the 14-day quarantine is still a requirement unless you can meet specific parameters around testing. And so those testing parameters are that if you are traveling out of New York to another state and you're there less than 72 hours, you can get tested in New York before you go. And then you need to get tested in New York upon your return, and you must remain in quarantine for 4 days. On the fourth day, you can get tested. Once you have two negative results, so one from that original test and the one that you did on day four, then you are free to leave quarantine at that point. If you can't do either one of those tests, you need to remain in quarantine for the full 14 days. If you're traveling out of New York for more than 72 hours and or you're someplace else and have been there for more than 72 hours and then are planning to come to New York, you must get tested in your point of origin before you leave. And then when you arrive in New York, you must quarantine. And on day four, you can get tested. If both of those results come back negative, you can leave quarantine and are free to move about. If you cannot do either one of those testing requirements, you must remain in quarantine for 14 days.
Mm. Okay. Thank you very much.
I think that was clear. Henry, Martha, Mike Sickler, Rich John.
Yes. Amy, how much of the testing, the surveillance testing funds, have we received from FEMA?
Received or requested, Henry? Received none. We've requested all the invoices. I just got the last 2 weeks' invoice today, so we'll be putting that in. But we have not received any FEMA reimbursement at this time for anything. It is all pending approval still.
And no one has in New York State. No county has received anything yet.
Yep.
I think have other states
been getting it.
Have other states received funding?
The state?
Well, other. You said no place in New York State has received funding. So I'm wondering whether, like, New Jersey's received funding or any place else.
I don't know about that. I know from an ISAC call I was on last week or the week before, no other county had received funding, and I think we had made it the furthest in the request process than anybody else. So we shared with them what we've done so far because the NYSAC staff were interested in it.
Okay. One other question. Frank, they all around us, like Tioga County, Onondaga County, their numbers are going off the chart. And I'm wondering whether that will impact us in any way. And what do you know what's going on in those other counties?
There's several questions there. I think is it going to impact us? I think to a degree it already has. We have a lot of folks that incommute to our community, and we've certainly seen in cases where the case lives in another county, and we have mm-hmm. several contacts that we have to follow up on here locally because they've been here while infectious. But I don't think it's fair to say that they're somehow infecting us. I think there's just a lot more disease out there in the state and the country. I think we've been fortunate. We've been fortunate for the reasons we've talked about before. People are following the guidance. So when we do run into cases, there's not as many contacts because people are wearing masks and trying to avoid gatherings and maintaining their distance. So it's hard to say what's causing anything. You know, we don't really know. For certain, there are definitely settings that we've seen in counties around us, like state prisons or nursing homes or, quite frankly, higher education that isn't doing the same level of testing that ours are. So there's a lot of things that are playing into it. I don't know that we can say, well, we're doing this, and that's why our numbers are lower, other than to say I think our community has been really responsive to our request to follow guidance.
Okay. Also, I got tested on Friday. I did check online, but I also received a call on Monday, for what it's worth.
Great.
And I was asymptomatic. I'm done.
Thank you, Henry. Just so you know, the check is in the mail. Martha.
Henry, I hope you were also negative. I assume asymptomatic also means negative.
Yes, I was also negative.
Great, awesome. And I would encourage Leslie to go home. She's not feeling well, but that's not my call. Jason, would you mind sharing that table with the numbers again? I keep trying to understand it with the numbers of the tests and all.
I'm just waiting for my ride.
Good. Glad to hear it, Leslie. Take care of yourself. Okay, so could you walk us across? So the first column on the left is everybody who gets tested, all counties, right? The next is just Tompkins. Is everything to the right there just Tompkins then?
Yes, everything to the right is just Tompkins.
Okay. So then without symptoms or exposure is kind of surveillance. It's the...
They could be traveling, they could be a close contact. Well, they wouldn't be a close contact, but they could also identify that they have a need for a test. They feel they need a test.
Martha, if you look at the table, as each column narrows down the pool of people.
Yes.
Right? So the first column is everyone that got tested, doesn't matter county. Next column is Tompkins County. The next is folks without symptoms or exposure. Those are the non-medically necessary, which aren't covered by insurance. And then the next one is the sponsoring, that so somebody else will be paying for it, which then gets us to our total number and what our cost is.
Okay. All right. Got it. Because from that no sponsoring organization, then you switch to the dollars from the people.
Correct.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And without symptoms or exposure, that could be people who are preoperative, right? Also?
It could be, but they would be considered...
Those are considered medically necessary.
They would be necessary.
And so insurance is paying for those.
Yep.
Okay. All right. And does Medicaid and Medicare pay?
Yes, I believe so.
Using the same criteria, yeah.
Yeah, same criteria.
Okay. And... all right, I was thinking I could get some contacts at NACO. I can ask and see if other counties are getting FEMA reimbursement. So is this through the CARE? What we're looking for is through the CARES Act?
No, this is FEMA reimbursement. This is not CARES Act funding.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Martha. I think Mike Spigler was next, then Rich John.
Hey, Frank. Obviously, the good news this week was Pfizer and Moderna. I'm just wondering, I know it's early yet, but both those vaccines would have to be kept really cold. Obviously, the Moderna one not as cold, but do we even have the kind of capacity to take the vaccine, even if it was available?
Yeah, so the Pfizer one is the super cold, that's somewhat unusual. The Moderna one, the temperatures there are fairly common for vaccines needing to be kept frozen. So for the regular freezing, we have capacity at the health department, the hospital has capacity, Cornell has capacity. For the super cold, the hospital is trying to acquire some capacity, but we have been working with Cornell, and they do have some capacity for those super cold freezers as well. As I understand it, for the super cold, that has to be reconstituted. So it comes in a vial, and then a pharmacist has to do their magic to make it a dose for someone. And then from that point, you have 5 days under normal refrigeration to use the vaccine. So there's a lot of moving parts and pieces to how you store and maintain cold chain.
Okay, thank you, Frank. And to be clear, magic will be involved then. That's great. Thank you.
Just a little bit.
Is that black magic or white magic?
One part reality and two parts magic. Rich John.
Thank you, Leslin. I just have a comment. Looking back, I am very happy that we took the step of setting up this funding mechanism for the testing, given what's happening in our community as well as nationally, which it's hard to even turn the news on. It's really, really good we have this capability. And I did want to say thank you to everybody who's up at the mall working this program to allow the testing to happen. We'll stick with it, but this is
thank
good
you, Rich.
We're there. Yeah.
Thank you. Is there any update, Frank or Jason, on downtown testing facility? You know, that's a question that I get frequently, and I know other legislators do as well.
Amy, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. I like that Leslin asked the two of you, though, so I was going to let one of you take it. as far as the downtown facility, we are working through the details of that facility right now. We do hope to have something up soon after Thanksgiving. We're working with Kiga Health Systems on that. With that being said, it will be a smaller facility than the mole sampling site. We will not be shutting that site down. That will continue to operate. It'll also be more likely to be an indoor venue, which will be helpful during cold times, and it will be appointment only. So some differences there. The capacity will be smaller because it's an inside venue. We're still finalizing where it will be, and we'll make sure that we put that announcement well in advance and so that we can increase some of our testing.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it. Thanks, Amy.
Yep.
Anyone else? Yeah, all right. Very spirited discussion of the presentation.
Listen, I have one more item to update this legislature on non-COVID related. I spoke with Bill Talbot over at TC3 late last week, and they did receive their payment less than their 20% for the September aid that they were supposed to receive in September. So they did get that last week. As I think they were told it would come in November. It did come in November, but it was only 80% of their aid. So it's good news that they got it, not good news that they didn't get the full amount.
Well, thank you for that. That is good news. We're happy for that.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. County Attorney Jonathan Wood?
Yeah, I don't have a report.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
Good evening.
Some documents.
Good evening. I have one short item here to share with you, which I'll share the screen here in a moment. Do you see our October sales tax distribution on your screen?
Yes, sir.
Very good. I just wanted to bring to you our October receipts. You can see here in the middle of the screen that we're down 10.69% for the month of October. And if you look to the year-to-date, Over here, we're at 28,031,000 compared to 31,800,000 last year in 2019. So the decrease is 3,778,000, which means we're down year over year to the tune of 11.88%. So that brings us a little bit closer to recovery. Not too much. It's improving ever so slightly with each month. And this is as of the end of October. So we have two more months to share with you before we round out this fiscal year. And that's all I have. Jason, do you have any other comments on sales tax you want to offer?
No, other than, unfortunately, we continue to be at the lower end of the scale of all the counties in the state, and hopefully November and December will move us into a little bit. It'd be nice to get that number down to under 10 for a comparison from 20 to 19. That would put us in a better position. I'd like to see that if that's possible, but we'll see what happens, and January, February, we'll see how the year fares. But it's better than what we projected 3 months ago, which is good, but I'd like to see it a little bit better going into next year.
All right, then, lots of hands. I am going to take my leave and let Shauna take over from here.
Okay, Martha, would you like to ask the first question?
Yeah, thank you, and feel better, Leslie. Get some sleep. Rick, on the...
Yes.
On the table, sometimes I try to look at the difference between the municipalities and the city, and it looked like the municipality, if I remember, you had the city was in the neighborhood of 8%.
Right.
The municipalities are 8% down year to date. The city, 15.5% down.
That's right. And so, it's been lopsided like that ever since COVID began, and 1 month, there'll be one group that far outweighs another group. There was a time when the city was in showing better, and then this particular month, the inside the city numbers were the worst. But year to date, as of right now, the municipalities are faring a bit better there at a minus 8.5%. So only time will tell how the final numbers come in. They just had a big reconciling item as of the end of last month, and that kind of brought things closer together again. We won't have another big reconciling quarter end or year end until December's final figures are in, which we won't get and bring to you till sometime in mid-January. So we still have a couple months yet to see how this whole thing plays out. But you are correct in sharing that the share seems to be disparate between the three different groupings here.
Would you mind scrolling it down so we can see the top? So this is – okay, so that the right-hand column is year-to-date. That summarizes everything. Okay.
Right. This top section here summarizes everything. And you can see the county's portion is usually almost identical, if not identical, to the total portion. That's because the county's portion is so big compared to all the other portions.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Next, Ann Corman.
Thank you, Shauna. Rick, I had one question for you. Would you recommend that as much as possible people buy their gifts and holiday supplies locally?
Oh, yes. That would be great. But as you know, that our largest leading and highest rank in increasing sector for sales tax has been internet sales. Our portion of the new internet sales category has gone up much, much higher where everything else seemingly goes down, and that's obvious. You all know the reasons for that. So it's better for our local economy, for our citizens, for our businesses, for our bricks and mortar businesses, that you shop locally, you buy your cars here locally. It's always a shot in the arm, and being a very good citizen and generate sales tax right here in Tompkins County. But at least now we do get our fair share of those internet sales tax dollars.
Thank you, Rick. Well said.
Are there any other questions for Rick? I don't see any other hands. Thank you very much, Rick and Drew, for joining us tonight. Have a good night.
Thank you.
I do not see any other county staff this evening here at our meeting. Are there any other resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Anna.
I don't have anything to withdraw or add. I just wanted to know, I'm not feeling so well myself, if there's any way that HED and Tiger could be moved up to the top. And then I might hit my bed too.
Absolutely. Do we want to go ahead and do that right now? Is that all right with everyone? Okay. Anna, would you, Martha, would you like to move that resolution?
Sure. I have the title of the committee passed, and I know Anna should have a correction or an edit. So, as the committee passed our resolution, urging New York State to ask the wealthiest New Yorkers to pay more to support their fellow citizens during this crisis. That's number 9713. I so move.
Anna?
A second, and I have an amendment.
Okay.
I just wanted to amend the title. We talked about it in committee, but we didn't have time to do it, so we decided we would do it afterwards and just bring it to the full legislature. So a more accurate title is urging New York State to increase taxes on its wealthiest residents commensurate with their ability to pay to help address the state's budget deficit in the aftermath of the pandemic.
And Martha, is that friendly?
Absolutely.
And would you like to talk a little bit about this resolution, Martha?
Sure. It was Anna helped pull some examples together and some rationale. The we've just seen it's sort of legendary that they're calling it a K recovery, where the wealthiest people are doing great in this economic disaster, and the people at the lower end of the economy are just really being pummeled for a variety of reasons. And we feel that the income tax base of New York State, as well as other taxes, having, for example, on stock transfers and other mechanisms to tweak the tax structure, should really be considered so that we see more of the responsibility for paying for our state services to be borne by the people at the top end of the income scale. So we weren't specifically endorsing any one, but there are a number of proposals that have already been introduced into the state legislature, and we were just kind of trying to push our little voice towards the legislature considering those, and the governor, we hope, being willing to take those on and really make those shifts to help solve the really significant crisis that we have.
Very good. Thank you, Martha. Anna, do you have a question or comment?
Just a comment that I wanted to add. There's just some data that I shared with Martha. Some of it got included in the resolution. First of all, that this is really referring to the 119 billionaires. This is not, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry who happens to earn more than $100,000 a year. So I just want to make sure that people understand the billionaires tax and who it would affect. That group has seen over an 8.5% increase in their wealth since February. I'm going to repeat that. They've seen over an 8.5% increase in their total wealth, already starting as billionaires, since the pandemic began. And that these resolutions at the state or these bills at the state level would specifically address those groups. There's also specifically some legislation that would close some loopholes in Wall Street. So there's a couple things that I want to note about it. One, there has been an analysis, extensive analysis, that shows what the benefit would be of these bills that exist at the state level. So anyone who's concerned that they wouldn't actually address the deficit that we're seeing at the state, which is about $14, $15 billion just this year, the stock buyback alone is expected to increase a revenue of about $13 billion from that analysis. And I'm happy to share that. The other piece that people are concerned about is that people will simply pick up and leave. There was an analysis done, historical data as well as current data that specifically, for example, as it notes in the resolution, related to SALT. And when that happened, there was no exodus of the reduction, as everybody knows, the adjustment that the federal government did. There was no mass exodus of the billionaires or ultra-millionaires from the state. So I just wanted to counter some of those arguments that that I've heard and get that information out there. Thanks.
Thank you, Anna. Are there any other comments? Mike Sigler. Mike, we can't hear you.
Hey, I had to fix it. I'm sorry. I'll comment just because I can, I guess. Listen, generally when I like to pass resolutions and things, I like to pass things that solve a problem or address a problem. And my main issue with this resolution is that I just don't think it does that. Let's just go through some of the things that were said, 119 billionaires in New York State. Listen, I don't know any billionaires. I don't hang out with that crowd. I don't, if their taxes go up, it doesn't really impact me. The problem is their taxes aren't going to go up. What we're talking about is wealth. We're not talking about this person doesn't get a paycheck and we're like digging it for another 3%. We're talking about Jeff Bezos, whose stock has gone up exponentially, right? And how do you capture that? You actually can't. It's a stock price. It's an unrealized amount of money. So unless we're saying, hey, we're going to go and really capitalize and confiscate some of that wealth from him, you're not going to achieve what you're planning here. I just don't see this as really bringing in any more money. But beyond that, the problem is bigger than this. You were looking at a $6 billion deficit before COVID. Now you're looking at what, $12 billion more than that now at the state level? This is not let's raise more money problem. This is a systemic problem. And to act as if there's not an exodus, there was 119 billionaires before. That was a couple of years ago. Now there's 92, according to Forbes. And I don't know, that number seems to keep going down. That's a 25% hit just to the billionaires. We're not even talking about the exodus of people from New York City yet. Every day you're reading stories about people leaving the city. Now, when it comes to things like stock transfers, they tried this back in the 80s. The stock market said, listen, you do this, we're going to go. And then they decided not to do it. Well, yeah, because that's a problem. You're going to kill a golden goose there if you do that. I don't know if the stock market would pick up and leave. But frankly, after COVID-19, I've got to imagine they're looking at it because – frankly, all the servers already for NASDAQ are in New Jersey. They're not in New York City anymore. And they're even talking about leaving New Jersey. NASDAQ is. Because why not? Money's mobile. Why not go to there's no reason to be for NASDAQ to be in New Jersey. If they're just going to keep taxing them and taxing them more, they're going to eventually say, why are we here? We're a bunch of computers. It doesn't matter where we are. So I understand that everybody looks at this and goes, hey, listen, we can get some money out of doing this. There's frankly not enough billionaires to close a $12 billion hole. And yeah, you would need something like a stock transfer tax because it functions a lot like a gas tax, right? Why did the gas tax raise so much money that we never see? Because yeah, everybody uses gas. But this just does not at all, I think, address the problem we're trying to get at. And it's like a feel-good thing. Like, we're telling our people, hey, look, we're going to go after these people. They're not paying their fair share. Yeah, you know, it doesn't get us there. It doesn't address the problem. So that's my 2 cents on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Next up is Martha.
That's why we put the word help in the title. We don't think that just if it doesn't solve the entire gap, bridge the entire gap, that we should leave those dollars on the table. What's the alternative? You're going to cut $16 billion worth of state services and aid to localities and aid to schools? I don't think so. I mean, I think there needs to be a balanced approach, and this is all this is saying, and that's kind of one specific reason we didn't specifically pick a piece of legislation to push. We think that the legislature has, and really there are actual bills on a whole variety of these kinds of measures, and I think that the legislature can sort through them and make sure we've got the best balance and the fewest unintended consequences, et cetera. I think it's profoundly irresponsible not to take a look at increasing taxes on the people who are doing so well in this economy and who have the most to give. I could call it a moral issue even. So I think we're not there yet. Anna's going to be figuring this out, but on our behalf, on behalf of our residents, because I'm pretty sure our folks aren't in the billionaire category. I think it's the right thing to do to share the feeling with our representatives in Albany that this should be where at least part of the solution for the state's gap.
Thank you, Martha. Anna?
I just wanted to say one correction, that I said the stock buyback, I meant the stock transfer tax. I'm not going to argue. Mike and I are really battling back and forth the arguments that are at the state. So you all have heard it now. Read the newspapers. They all say the same thing, the two arguments. One other clarification is there are still 119 billionaires in the state. So just wanted to clarify that. But otherwise, you got the two points of view, and everybody can fall where their conscience tells them.
Thank you, Anna. I see no other hands up for discussion. Let's do a roll call.
Can I ask that Anna send me the changes to that title?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Mike Figler?
No.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
No.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
About 11 ayes, 2 noes.
Okay. Thank you, Martha, for bringing that forward. And Anna for Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I can just finish my report really fast. But we have,
yeah, sure. Yep.
Yeah, we haven't met since the last legislature meeting. We met the day before the last meeting. Our next meeting is December 2nd at 11:30, and we will be hearing from the new state assemblywoman. Assemblywoman-elect priorities for, what, first 100 days, first year, whatever. And I will probably reach out to Allison Hunt as well to see if she can join us from Congressman Reed's office. Thanks. That's all I got.
Okay. Thank you. We are going to move on to our consent agenda, resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees.
Hey, Shauna, do you mind if I just have Deborah do my HED update?
That sounds great.
Okay. Cool.
I'm gonna head out, everyone.
Feel better.
Thank you. Night, everyone.
Okay, we have advisory board appointments, ID 9712. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Deanna Carruthers, County Staff Representative, terms expiring December 31st, 2020 and 2023. From the PEAK Committee, we have Environmental Management Council, the Vocatus, Village of Trumansburg Representative, term expires December 31st, 2021. Jeff Walker, Village of Cuba Heights Representative, term expires December 31st, 2022. Maureen Bolton, Town of Enfold Representative, term expires December 31st, 2022. Ron Szymanski, Village of Freeville Representative, term expires December 31st, 2022. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Historical Commission, Susan Curry, term expires December 31st, 2023. Sandra K. List, term expires December 31st, 2023. Eve Snyder, term expires December 31st, 2023. John Wordis, term expires December 31st, 2023. Michael J. McGandy, term expires December 31st, 2022. Strategic Tourism Planning Advisory Board, term expires December 31st, 2023. Deb Mollenhoff, Tompkins Cortland Community College Representative, Monica Roth, Agriculture Representative. And moving on to our consent agenda, Resolution A, Correction of Errors, ID 9693. Resolution B, to amend Resolution Number 2019 through 289 of December 17th, 2019, determination and certification of county clerk's allowance, annual expenses for administering mortgage tax, ID 9637. Resolution number E. Sorry, is that an E or a C? That is a C. Sorry. Resolution to update the Administrative Policy Manual, Policy 11-05, Retention and Disposition of Records, ID 9705. Resolution number D, authorizing a public hearing of Local Law Number blank of 2020, a local law amending Section 205 and Section 209 of Article 2 of the Tompkins County Charter, ID 9710. Resolution E, approval of the 2020 and 2021 amendments of the Municipal Cooperative Agreement for the Greater Tompkins County Municipal Health Insurance Consortium, ID 9701. Can I have a mover, please?
Shauna, I'm sorry, on D, we had a small language change. I don't know if this needs to be pulled for that. The charter change.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and pull it, and then in GO, Amanda, do you mind talking about that and moving it? Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, if I can have a mover, please.
I'll move it, Shauna.
Moved by Deborah. I could have someone second, please. Seconded by Glenn Morey. And we will do roll call.
Mike Sickler.
Mike, we can't hear you. There you go.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you, everyone. Let's move on to our standing and special committees. Mike Lane, if you could give us a report for Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
The F&I Committee has not met since our last legislature meeting. We will meet again this coming Thursday, November 19th at 9 o'clock a.m.
Are there any questions for Mike?
Dan?
Thank you. It's not a question. I just want to comment that on our agenda is a lot of information about a substantial potential increase in the solid waste fee. So, you know, if that's of interest to you, you might want to tune into this discussion.
Yeah, I think we gave a heads up about that before, but thanks, Dan. That's exactly right.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you, Mike. Next, we have Government Operations Committee, Chair Amanda Champion.
Yeah, thank you, Shauna. GO has not met since our last meeting, but Dan and Rich and I have continued to plug away at our small committee revising the rules of the legislature. We will meet again on December 3rd. So that is my report, but I have a couple of resolutions, unless people have questions.
Are there any questions for Amanda? I do not see any.
All right, so we have resolution F, designation of newspaper. And I think this is on here because it was not a unanimous vote in committee. So I would move that.
Is there a seconder? Seconded by Martha. And Amanda, would you like to talk to this resolution?
Sure. It's a resolution we do every year where we need to designate a newspaper that we put all our notices and updates in. Usually someone has a commentary on the lack of journalistic sources in Tompkins County. So if anyone wanted to give a speech to that effect, you are welcome to do that.
Thank you, Amanda. Mike?
This is on here because I vote against this every year. Because while I miss riding down to the local market on my horse and buggy to get my paper, this is just, it's ridiculous that the state requires this. Not that it requires the posting of this information, but that it requires us post it in a daily newspaper that, frankly, isn't even our local newspaper anymore. I mean, if you want the information to be disseminated to people in some kind of useful form, this is not the way to do it. And for the state to not recognize that at this late date, after 20-something years, I can never vote for this. And if that meant that at the end of the day we had 8 votes against it and the state goes, well, you can't do that. You've got to post this stuff. And we came up with a different way to post the information so that somebody in the public can actually disseminate the information. Great. I don't think that's a real problem. But I always felt that these little notices, I missed the newspaper. I missed picking it up on Saturday morning and going and reading it over breakfast. But frankly, there's nothing in there anymore, and most people have kind of figured that out. So, to me, I just think we need to look at this whole thing a different way. So anyway, that's why I vote against it, and that's why I'll continue to vote against it. And I don't know why the state does it this way. So that's it.
Thank you, Mike. We have Deborah and then Martha.
Thanks, Shauna. I have to say, for the first 2 years, I voted yes on this because we had to. But I guess I'm getting older and more cranky. I agree with Mike Sigler. It's just ridiculous. I'm going to vote no for this. It's not going to make a difference. But I'm hoping that since so many of us participate so enthusiastically with NYSAC, that we might actually push some sort of resolution or action to get the state to recognize the reality that many places in New York State don't have a printed daily newspaper and are much better served by online media.
Thank you, Deborah. Martha?
Look, when the monthly charge comes through for the Ithaca Journal on our credit card bill, and I cringe and I realize, well, you know, like, it's kind of good kindling for the fire. So I almost always almost cancel it. But frankly, almost the thing that's worse than the paper is their website. So I cannot, like, I can be looking at a cover story in my hands and cannot find it on the website. So aside from the whole idea of, I mean, but really the more important thing is that people don't all have the internet. They really don't. And that's why we're doing the broadband study, in case anybody forgot. So I really, it's devastating that this is the best we have, but it's what we have. And I think it's more democratic, small d, that it exists than that it doesn't. And I will vote for this and wish the world were different, but it isn't. So I think we need to keep doing this.
Mike, Lane?
Mike Sigler and Deborah is absolutely right. Martha's absolutely right. The problem here is the loss of a local newspaper with local reporting. It adds to the fact that we're more divided because our population does not get both sides in an independent way in their stories anymore. I call it the Ithaca ad wrapper because basically that's what it is. It's a way of getting revenue to that Gannett organization from the big box stores and other people. But on the other hand, we have to do that. We did look at this, you know, a couple of years ago and decided to put more of our legal notices, for example, in some of the weeklies. And I still think that that is happening. But we still have this state requirement. I wish we could put them in the weeklies instead of the Ithaca Journal, but we can't. And the weeklies don't circulate to everybody in the county either. So that's a problem as well. I will vote for this and hold my nose.
Jonathan Wood, county attorney.
Yeah, just to be clear, this is a law that certain things need to be published in the paper, like a local law needs to be published in the designated paper. Otherwise, it could be challenged as invalid. Mike Sigler is right. It's an incredibly stupid law. It's archaic, but it's the law.
Thank you, Jonathan. Okay, thank you all for your comments. I actually agree with Mike Sigler and Deb, so I will not be supporting this. Okay, I see no other comments, so let's do a roll call. Mike Sigler?
I'm glad I get to vote first on this, so no.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morin?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
No.
We have 9 ayes, 3 noes. Thank you very much, Amanda. And do you have another resolution?
Yeah, I do. Resolution D was taken off of the consent agenda. excuse me. And that is authorizing a public hearing. As you all know, we have changed. A couple months ago, we voted to change the first segment of the rules of the legislature. We want everything in the charter to reflect those changes. So this resolution is specifically just setting a public hearing to make those changes. In the text of what the new charter will say, though, there was one other small change that needed to be made. So for folks with a packet, it's packet page 9. And there's some gender language that we'd like to change towards the bottom in the last paragraph. The vice chair shall receive no additional remuneration unless he, it says, unless he shall act, and we'd like to change that to they, unless they shall act. And I think that's the only place that there was a gender word that we wanted to change, but if somebody knows of something else, please speak up.
Is that a manifest?
Yes.
Okay. So that will be a manifest changed.
Okay.
So Amanda, would you like to move that?
I would like to move that.
Okay. Is there a seconder? Martha, seconds? And thank you for explaining the resolution to us. Are there any questions for Amanda?
I would just add, Shauna, that, again, this is just a public hearing. We'll have a public hearing, and then we will actually vote on the content of it after that.
Thank you very much. I see no other questions. Let's do a roll call to vote on this.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna? Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you, Amanda. Would you like to add anything else?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next up is Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Shauna. Just let me get to my... Oh, boy. Ah, okay, there it is. So the PEAK Committee will be meeting next Monday at 1:30. And we will be getting a report on our greenhouse gas emissions study, our green fleet and green facilities updates. The Department of Recycling and Materials Management educational plan to encourage the use of reusable plastic or bags generally. We will also be continuing to discuss among ourselves the Green Workforce Development Plan that was presented this morning at HED. I was pleased to see all of the PEAK members at this morning's presentation. Thank you all for fitting that in your schedule, and that's all I've got for now.
Okay. Thank you very much, Deborah. Next is Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Shauna. The Budget, Cabinet, and Personnel Committee met last on November 9th, and we had our hearing on the tentative budget November 10th. As everybody remembers, we did not have any speakers from the public. Our next meeting is December 14th, and I expect at that point, at that meeting, we are hoping to dive into the rollover policy and take a look at what it says and whether we want to make any changes. At this last meeting, we had a lot of end-of-year resolutions, and they were around. I wanted to make a point about the Resolution E on the about the Tompkins County Municipal Health Insurance Consortium. Consortium now has 49 members, and that's one of those unsung successes. It's really been a fantastic program, a fantastic collaboration, intermunicipal collaboration, intercounty collaboration. And Elin Dowd is the new director since last year, and she presented. And this is, it's saved taxpayers millions of dollars in the last 10 years. So really proud of that. Just wanted to give a shout out about the consortium. So that's the report. And if there are no questions, I'll go to the resolution.
Are there any questions for Martha? Hey, I see none.
Okay. So we have a resolution, and Kevin emailed us today a slight change, but I'll go ahead and move the resolution and then mention the numbers that are different. Resolution G, document 9724, adoption of the 2021 Tompkins County budget and 2021-2025 Tompkins County Capital Program, and I so move.
I have a second, please. Seconded by Dave McKenna.
All right. And if I can, I did email everybody. If you look at the, I don't have the line. Let me see the line numbers. It would be line number 24, the third resolve from the bottom. So I'll read this, then I'm going to hand it off to Jason to explain it. There's a rate decrease of approximately 1.6%, not 1.61%. So the correct number is 1.60. And then in the second to last resolve, this tax change will result in an increase of approximately $42.87 on a median-priced home assessed at $200,000. So instead of 42.77, it's 42.87. And there was a slight change in the tax base. So if Jason would take it from here.
Sure. This always happens. There's usually slight little tweaks that happen after the fact. It's just a slight change in taxable assessed value. In this case, the total taxable assessed value dropped $685,000 through small little changes. The impact is that there was an increase in the tax rate by 0.0005. That's 0.005 of a penny. The impact is that the tax rate still stays at $6.21, but the actual impact to a $200,000 median home value goes from $42.77 to $42.87. So it's a dime increase on the impact based on that slight change. Again, this happens usually every year, little tweaks and corrections in the assessed value number, nothing significant, but I want to make you aware of it.
Thank you very much, Jason. I also wanted to point out, although we have, again, line 25, 0.83% decrease in local spending, the total budget is 5.6% less than our 2020 budget. With a 10.1% decrease in revenue. So that's a pretty big gap. And it means really we lost 10% of our revenue, cut our overall spending by just under 6%. And, those are kind of the bigger numbers there.
Okay. Are there any questions for Martha or Jason? I do not see any. Oh, Mike Lane?
No question, just that kind of a, it seems like you've already gone over this once or twice before. It seems like sort of a, just a formality, but it's really not. I'm so proud of the budget process we have in this county. And have developed over the years, and particularly the people who make it work, starting from our budget officer, our county administrator, and the people and his staff like Kevin McGuire, our director of finance, Rick Snyder, and his helpers, and all people in there. We couldn't possibly have gone through this COVID year and had any idea what we were doing without the great advice, the great research that they have done. So my hat's off to them and my thanks to them for what they've done for us. I'm going to vote for this, of course, but I just want to remind everybody that starting tomorrow, we're working on the 2021 budget.
2022.
Oh, that's right. This is 2022. Well, yes.
Gosh, Mike, you're the ray of sunshine.
Well said, Mike. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to agree, and we have thanked Kevin and Jason and the department heads and Autumn Edwards for scheduling 1,000 meetings that Jason had with department heads and all of our staff who've had to really roll with a lot of punches. We have kind of made those acknowledgments, but I want to, it's worth saying them again. And it does always feel like this moment is kind of the anticlimax, but we better, Kathy will never let us forget to do it. So, again, thanks to everybody who got us here.
Thank you, Martha. Let's do a roll call.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich Johns?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you.
That's good. That's it. That's my report.
Thank you, Martha. Next is Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Annie Corman, Chair.
Thank you. We did not meet since our last meeting, our last legislative meeting, and obviously we didn't meet since our last meeting. And our next meeting is going to be a combined November-December meeting on December 2nd in the afternoon after the Tiger meeting. It'll be at 3:30, and that'll be our last meeting for the year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ann.
I'm sorry, I had one more thing.
Yeah, sure.
Since Dr. Clark isn't here, I wanted to just do a shout out for another of his in his monthly series that he's doing, and that's this Friday, November 20th. This forum that he's having is called Centering Race, Racial and Other Forms of Equity in Our Work. So I really encourage all our legislators, staff, people in the community to please attend that. It's only an hour. That's at noon. You could have your lunch while you're watching. So that's Friday at noon, and that's on our Tompkins County YouTube channel. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Ann. Martha, do you have anything else to add for the Tompkins Intergovernmental Relations Committee?
No, I've also had it covered.
Okay, thank you. Next up is Housing and Economic Development Committee. Anna Kellis, Chair. However, she's not here. Mike Sigler, you're Vice Chair, I believe.
I am, and I did not expect her to be leaving. So,
surprise.
I know, right? Well, we had a good discussion today. You know, the housing. Let me pull up that agenda.
We have the B team in tonight.
Yeah, Anna had asked me to report out on the green workforce development report, but because that's something we're working with jointly on PEAK and HED and the CASE board, but I'll let Mike report on the other stuff and then I'll jump
in. I'll tell you what, Deborah, why don't you go and I'm going to go grab the that folder. So go ahead with your report.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks, Mike. We got a report this morning from a remarkable young woman who's not even 20 years old. She's a freshman at Cornell. She is a member of our CASE board, and she has spearheaded a subgroup of that board that has developed a report and recommendations on green workforce development in Tompkins County. So she presented that group's draft report this morning to HED. And all of our PEAK members attended. The report is terribly lengthy, but certainly too long for me to go through the details here. There was an executive summary that presents an overview of the suite of recommendations that the group made to the county in terms of, let's see, framing the definition of green jobs to meet the climate challenge, meeting our emissions reduction targets and objectives, coming up with a program of green jobs training, including a
apprenticeship readiness that might be something that we can work with TC3 to present. They could be a hub for that sort of training. And let's see, a part of that would be the creation of a Green Jobs Training and Diversity Council tasked with designing a comprehensive green and ready work readiness program to precede on-the-job training. Natalie Bernoski, our workforce development person, has been working pretty closely with the case board, with Ellie and her group on this report, and she's, you know, 150% ready to have this training and diversity council as part of workforce development. So that's very positive. And then there were some specific recommendations to make the IDA a greener place. The main one of those recommendations is the appointment of a representative from the Building Trades Council to the IDA. And that certainly prompted a robust discussion at this morning's meeting, and that robust discussion will continue at peak next week, and I suspect it will continue in this legislature as well in the future. And then also, because Allie and her small group were only, again, a small group of volunteers, there were holes in the data that they were able to collect. And even though they talked with an extensive list of people about this report, they couldn't talk to all the stakeholders. So they recommend that the county, either through the Workforce Development Board or some other organ, calculate exactly how many people are out of work, underemployed, and working multiple jobs. So a target number of green job placements in the county could be established. And then just generally acquire and collate more data on the unemployment situation in our county in the wake of COVID. So, Mike, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm going to add on a little bit of things to what you were just talking about. I will say the that came today's meeting came as a little bit of a surprise to people that are actually on the IDA, because, you know, if you're reading through the agenda, you'll see it and you're like, oh, okay, this sounds interesting. And then when we started digging into it at the meeting, it involved much more about the IDA than was actually in the report. That became really the centerpiece of what people were talking about. So it would be my recommendation to, you know, probably talk to the executive director of the IDA about what the plans are, because there were certain things I certainly didn't know. Like the IDA, you know, you can have anywhere between 3 and 7 members. So we've actually maxed out on the number of members. So if you were going to add people in, you know, add a seat that was designated for a person, you couldn't just add that in. You'd have to literally replace person. And that may be the direction that the IDA wants to go, but it seemed like we were having the discussion without some of the stakeholders in the room. So that was something I think we're going to have to work on with the IDA. What else? You know, there were other things. Listen, I get a lot of people were there to kind of say that the IDA, they don't think that it's doing the job. It's not diverse enough. Frankly, I look at our IDA. It's a majority women. A lot of people like to say that the IDA, we need, you know, working people on there. 5 of the people that are on the IDA have full-time jobs aside from their legislative jobs. Or, you know, there's only 2 people who are retired. One of them literally just retired, and I brought up Martha Robertson, who, frankly, she's the least retired person I know. So, you know, I think a lot of these issues that they're bringing up are important. I don't think you kind of denigrate what you have, though, to kind of get to the new place. And we'll see where we get to with the new place. I mean, it's not like we haven't been studying this. And frankly, for the IDA's point of view, it's not like we haven't made pretty great strides. I mean, when it comes to things like even affordable housing, I mean, that's something that literally was not a requirement all of what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So to act as if there hasn't been forward movement at the IDA, I think is something I'm reading about on Facebook and stuff, and I don't agree with, and I generally push back against those, so it aggravates me. So we definitely talked about that. There were some other good things we did, advisory board appointments, historical commission. We brought in a lot of people, actually, five people there. Strategic Tourism Planning Advisory Board. Deb Molyneux, Monica Roth, you know both of them. They are both back on there. So what else? Then we just did some basic business, terminal pay and things like that. And that was about it. But, yeah, definitely the Climate and Sustainable Energy report took up the lion's share of the time. So thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Martha, and then Rich John.
Yeah, Mike, I think I'm just tired. I'm not retired. I'm just it was a little bit of a mix. It was sort of presented as the report, and then as the conversation went on, it was acknowledged it was like the first step, and it's still going back to the case board from, I don't know, more work, revision, I'm not sure what else. And then would come back to peak. And so I guess my question is to Deborah, peak's going to have a conversation next week, but that'll be before it goes back to case. Is that right?
Yeah, if there's a mad rush to get this thing approved or adopted by the legislature before the end of the year, we could certainly have a special meeting. I'm not sure that there is a mad rush. I'm not sure to what extent legislative action is going to follow on this report. I mean, there are certainly specific recommendations, and I expect that over time he could certainly put together resolutions that would present an opportunity for the legislature as a whole to adopt a specific recommendation. But as we discussed in the meeting this morning, there are pieces of this. For example, the task force or whatever you working group that Natalie is perfectly capable of putting together on her own initiative under workforce development that won't need legislative action. As Ali pointed out, the legislature cannot take action for the IDA. So to the extent that there were specific recommendations for things that the IDA can do, the legislature isn't in a position to make that happen. We could certainly express our preferences on the matter. So I don't know exactly how all of it's going to play out. I think it's going to probably get adopted or considered by the legislature in pieces, necessarily.
So I guess I would, it's important, all of that. We often don't adopt reports that come out of our staff. We'll often accept them, but not adopt. Adopt means say this is what we're going to do and we're going to carry out these policies. So I think this was a good beginning of the conversation. I certainly don't think unless there are some major changes to it, it's not appropriate for adoption. I'm not even sure it's ready for exception, for accepting. But
that will be up to a majority of the legislature.
What?
That would be up to a majority of the legislature, obviously.
Sure, but I think it's not fair to volunteers to bring something that's not, doesn't answer the questions that we want. So the main thing I wanted to say was Heather McDaniel did not know this was coming to the full to HED. She didn't have a copy of it before the HED meeting. She wasn't on the, her IAED wasn't on the agenda. So she didn't know this was on there. I hope when it's in whatever final shape it's going to be, I hope it will go directly to the IDA. And I didn't hear that today, but I guess I should have asked that today in the meeting. I assume that'll be a step that would be necessary if this group wants these things to be adopted.
Well, it's unfortunate that Anna's not here to clarify this, Martha, but my understanding is that Heather gets a copy of the HED agenda and agenda packet every month.
Yeah, but she wasn't on the agenda this month, and I happen to know she was presenting to 150 other of her colleagues around the state and country about our solar program. So, she apologized for not looking at the agenda. I guess knowing how much was related to the IDA, a heads up would have been preferable. I'm not trying to attack anybody here. I'm just trying to say that I think a really important step is to actually directly go to the IDA with this, to meet with Heather directly about it. You know, two IDA members were part of the group that was met with, but I think it needs more work.
As I said, it was a draft.
Okay, next is Rich John and then Henry Granison.
Yeah, I certainly don't want to sound like I'm piling on here, but as chair of the IDA, I would like to just comment. I would have loved to come to the meeting this morning. I had no idea it involved comment on the IDA, and I was working. You know, I teach, and I certainly could not teach my class. I also think it really would have helped if, in putting the report together, that there had been some contact with the IDA and the IDA members. You know, there doesn't seem to be a great divergence in terms of the overall goals, and I'd just like anybody who's watching at home to understand that the IDA has helped provide incentives for some of the most energy efficient buildings in Tompkins County. We have not only created an affordable housing policy, but an energy policy that's really leading. And if you look at the new construction in our county, they're doing really innovative, good things. A tip of the hat to Tatum Engineering, who's really cutting edge, and we've gotten their help in developing our policy, but it's worked. And we've also been successful, even through the pandemic, in continuing to see these projects put shovels in the ground. Our tax base has increased dramatically over the last decade, and the IDA has played a significant part in that. I don't want this conversation to suggest that our IDA is not working towards the betterment of the community. It really has. Can we do more and can we do better? And are we open to discussion? Sure, but come talk to us. So we'd be happy to have that conversation. Thanks.
Thank you, Rich. Next I have Henry, Deborah, and then Ann.
Yes. I guess I'd like clarification because, the jail study or the police study was just reported to us, correct? I mean, I wasn't on the legislature then, but when do reports get adopted and when do reports just get presented? Also, I had a number of other questions about the study, like basically how this worked with the – I wanted to ask Anna today, how is this working with the state? You know, are they going to be pushing on? I know that they just discussed the Green New Jobs during the debates, but I want to know what specifics that they had. I also want to know how this worked with the new Green Code of the city. I want to know how it worked with the city, for example. I also want to know, they focus on TC3, but I see as an engineer, as a green program, Cornell has a green program. Why didn't it work with those other colleges too? And so I had lots of questions. And so, I don't think it's ready yet. that we discussed today. Also, I do want to have a question about the appointment of a labor person. I assume the legislature would have to vote and the chair would have to recommend someone. So that would have to happen before February, I assume. And so what's going to happen with that? And so I will end, and anybody who can answer the questions for me, go ahead.
Thank you, Henry. So I actually had some of the same questions, and the responses that I received as far as how could we have labor representative on the IDA, the response to that was that there are a few different ways we could do it, is that a legislator could give up their seat, and that would have to be voted on by the legislature. And then at that point, we would appoint a labor person in January or whenever the seat was given up. And that was the route. It appears, I think someone stated earlier in our meeting that, I think it was Sigler that stated you could have 3 to 7 members. So I know that we have heard that you could increase the number of people in the IDA, but it sounds like that's really not an option.
Although, wait just a second. You said the legislature would have to give their seat up. Aren't the seats just year to year?
Yes, they are.
Yep.
Okay. So they don't have to give a seat up. They just wouldn't be reappointed.
That's exactly right. So essentially we would go from 4 to 3 legislators, and then one of those would go towards union representation.
Okay.
Okay. And I know, Henry, you asked a lot of questions, and, you know, my assumption is moving forward in PEAK, we're not going to figure it out tonight. There's too much to it. But, you know, my assumption is that Deborah is going to continue having the conversation. She will inform the legislature as she has these conversations so that IDA can be included as well as TCAN can be at the table. Is that fair, Deborah?
I'll do my best, and I gather that the best way to engage IAED is through AGD.
Okay. Okay. Next, I have Deb, Ann, and then Martha.
Yeah, I just want to say there is no need to defend the IDA's record, Rich. We all know that the IDA has worked and accomplished great improvements in the community. We all know that you've done some really great things in terms of a more climate and energy responsive policy. We all know that you've built tax base. This isn't about any of those things. It's really about labor having a seat at the table. I said this morning in the meeting, in order for us to have a vibrant economy here in Tompkins County, we need the involvement of government, we need the involvement of business, and we need a lot of good job opportunities. We need a workforce that's getting paid a wage that allows them to support their family and have enough disposable income left over to support the restaurants and local businesses that make this a great place to live, and to be able to afford to support the new things that we're building pursuant to IDA incentives. If we don't have that, I mean, it's a three-legged stool, and without all three legs, it falls over. And labor really just wants and needs and deserves a seat at the table where these decisions are being made.
Thank you, Deborah. Ann Corman?
Thank you. Someone had mentioned stakeholders. You know, the stakeholders need to be involved in this. And laborers, people who work or want to work in this county, people who live in this county, people who are growing up in this county, need to be included. Those are our stakeholders. One could argue that they should have more than one seat at the table, labor. So many counties around here and across New York State have labor already at the table at the IDA. Many of them have. I won't go into all the programs we went into it this morning, but they have labor requirements, apprentice program requirements. So I'm not sure. I know change is hard, but I think we just need to, you know, acknowledge, yes, we have done a great job. People that were on the IDA, you know, I'm new on the IDA this year, but people have done a great job. This is taking it to the next level. This is, you could say it's pivoting. You could say it's more inclusive. You could say this is reimagining how we can help our community, whatever works for you. But this is a good time. You know, if nothing else, I like to think that COVID has given us a time to sit back and reflect and how do we go forward and how do we be better and a way to supercharge turbocharge our organizations. So I think this is a good chance to look at all that. And I look forward to working with people at the legislature and on the IDA on how we can make this better. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Amanda Champion has not spoken to this, so I will call on her next, and then Martha and Rich. And Rich, if you could close us out.
Great. Thanks, Shauna. I was just going to say, I mean, I sat through the meeting. I found it very informative. I didn't hear criticism from the folks presenting. I heard ideas, options, research, hope, you know, change. I didn't hear anybody say anything negative about the IDA or about projects that are happening. It was, you know, we have these advisory boards to do these things. You know, we get these reports, we discuss them, we learn things. What I've heard is that this is the very beginning of an ongoing conversation. We're going to talk about it in P. We're going to get more drafts. I mean, I just would encourage my colleagues to, you know, especially those of you who have been here longer than me, to trust the process that, you know, this is what we do. And nobody's criticizing what folks have done. They're saying, we need to make a few changes, and here's some ideas for how to do that. And personally, I thought the ideas were good. I would love to see labor workers have a seat on the IDA, and frankly, I'm really hoping that happens, and I would support that going into the future. So anyway, it was very informative, and I think if folks have not read the report, please go read it. You can also obviously go back and watch the conversation today. It was at the end of the meeting. I found it very educational. So thanks.
Thank you, Amanda. Martha?
Yeah, I thought there was a tremendous amount of content. I agree that was like a whole lot of work that was done that went into it. So just to answer a couple questions somebody asked, When do we adopt or accept a report? Usually it has to do with something that our staff, like our energy strategy or the economic development strategy, or, you know, something that's a formal, sort of a formal document that directs our staff's work, that establishes a policy and directs our staff's work going forward. I'd also point out that a couple of years ago, I think it was the end of 2017, there were a couple of people going off the IDA. The at-large members were going off the IDA, and so there was an open application process. Applications were solicited from the community, which frankly was kind of the first time that had been done. So that was progress. That was a good step to look, you know, more broadly and publicize that. And we got a number of good applications. Labor was solicited. Labor was, you know, invited, asked, coaxed to apply. And in all honesty, I mean, there was one application and it was barely filled out. So it was really, we tried. I mean, there really was an effort to try to get somebody to fill a seat, not designate a seat for labor specifically, but we had a couple of at-large positions that were open, and we were looking for, you know, we tried to get that kind of voice at the table at the time. Certainly that could be done again. So I just wanted to say, I think that, and there was a lot in the report, not about who's on the IDA. So that wasn't the only topic of the main topic of the report from my point of view either. Thanks.
Thanks, Martha. Rich, John?
Yeah, and again, I'm happy to hear we're at the beginning of a process, that these aren't conclusions, they're just ideas, because process does matter. I agree with you, Amanda. We do need to go through this in a really thoughtful way. I've started reading this report. You know, I see there's a lot of comparison to surrounding counties. You know, and I will tell you that the IDA looks very carefully at the local labor component on projects and encourages, you know, the use of local labor. The executive director of the IDA and I have gone and talked to developers mid-project to try to say, why aren't you using more local labor? What's going on here? Is there a way you can get more local labor involved? We've tried to do this in a fairly analytical way. I would note that the references in the report to surrounding counties and their required component of local labor, you know, it's hard to know whether there's waivers being granted, but trying to be polite to our neighbors, I don't want their economic activity. I want ours. You know, we've been dramatically more successful. And it is a careful balance, you know, and again, we're at the beginning of a process. Let's go with open minds and everything else. But you want to balance all of the competing interests to make sure that you're maintaining economic growth while you're looking out for jobs, both construction jobs and long-term jobs that go on after the construction is complete. You know, you want to think about ancillary issues like daycare, affordable housing, energy policy, and it all goes into the mix. It's something where it's easy to say, here's a basic solution. We're going to say this will fix everything. And, you know, it might be an improvement, but we got to be really careful that we maintain the success level that we've had. I just worry. That's not to say we don't have the discussion, Ann and Deborah, this is good. But let's do it in a really careful and thoughtful way, and look at this and what you heard today as a starting point. Thanks.
Thank you, Rich. Okay, let's move on to our next committee. Actually, Mike, were you finished for the report for the Housing and Economic Development Committee? Okay, thank you. Next committee is Downtown Facilities Committee, Chair Dave McKenna.
Thank you. Downtown Facilities met on November 12th, and we basically discussed scenarios 9, 9.1, and 10 for the Tioga Street property. I believe at the end of that session, 9.1 was sort of the favorite of the people that were there, but in no way is that a guarantee that we're going to move forward with that particular design or anything else at that point. Beyond that, we went to executive session to discuss other real estate matters, and we closed the meeting without taking any action. As my report, we will meet again on December 10th at 4 p.m.
Thank you, Dave. We have a question from Deborah Dawson.
Hey, Deborah.
Hey, Dave. Thank you. Thanks, Shauna. For those of us who no longer remember what 9.1 is, could you just kind of remind us?
Yeah, I can tell you what it is quite easily. It says to restore the older building, which is the red building, new two single-family homes, parking 46,000 square feet of office space, second and third floor extension out over the parking lot. Basically, the two residences are split by a small parking lot with, I think it's nine spaces, if I remember correctly. Overall, there's 30 plus or minus parking spaces in total.
Thank you. Oh, thanks.
There's 9.1, Deborah.
Oh, thank you, Jason. That's great.
This was 9 with 1, 9.1 with 2 residential, and then 9 and then 10 with 3 residential, and a 4-story building with no overhang.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Go ahead, Dave.
As I said, we'll meet again December 10th at 4 p.m. Same time, same channel.
Thanks, Dave. Any other questions? I see no other hands. Next committee is the Public Safety Committee. Rich John Chair.
Thanks, Shauna. Thank you, Shauna. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting this Thursday at 3 o'clock on Zoom. I encourage anybody who wishes to speak to the committee to use the access points. And if you need help, you can get that from the clerk of the legislature. I anticipate we're going to get a report from CARS, Cuyahoga Addiction Recovery Services, on their methadone program. And I hope to also have the county administration give an update to the committee on the progress of the police reform resource group. And Jason, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I anticipate you'd be ready to help with that.
Absolutely. We'll be prepared to give a rundown of what's going on so far.
All right. I would note our jail population today is at 41. But other than that, I am prepared to answer questions if anybody has anything.
Are there any questions for Rich? I see no hands. Thank you, Rich. Next is Health and Human Services Committee. Deborah Dawson, Vice Chair, if you could give the report tonight.
Yes, thanks, Shauna. We didn't meet this month because there was nothing for us to do, which was kind of a nice break. We will have a special meeting at 5 p.m. before the next Ledge meeting, just to approve advisory board appointments and refer them to y'all. And our next full meeting will be on December 21st.
Okay, we still have that resolution?
Yes.
Okay.
The special meeting will be at 4 o'clock on December 1st.
Okay.
4 o'clock?
4 o'clock.
So the special meeting will be at 4 o'clock before our next meeting. And then we do have a resolution here that was passed in the previous meeting. Do you want to move that, Deborah?
Sure, I'll move it. It is, let's see, resolution number I, appropriation from contingent fund, 2019 community outreach worker program payment to Family and Children's Service of Ithaca, ID number 9631.
Is there a seconder? Seconded by Dave McKenna. And Jason, would you like to speak to this resolution?
Sure. This resolution is coming forward to pay for services in 2019, but because the fiscal year has already been closed out, we could not use funding from that fiscal year. So as a result, to make this payment, it'll have to come from contingent fund to do so. That's the short end of it. We had made multiple attempts to get billed for these services, but we're not successful. So it's now the billing's now come through. So we're looking to pay this bill from 2019.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Mike Sigler.
Yes.
Amanda Champion.
Yes.
Deborah Dawson.
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you, Kathy. Are there any individual member filed resolutions? I see no hands. We have minutes of the previous meeting, October 29th, 2020. If I could have a mover. Moved by Mike, seconded by Deborah Dawson. Are there any questions or comments? I see none. Let's do a roll call to vote for the minutes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0.
Thank you. I would ask that we now go into executive session relating to real estate matters and personnel issue with a certain employee. We will not be taking any formal action after our session this evening. I could have a mover. Martha, do you have a question?
I'm moving it.
Okay. If I could have a seconder, please. Seconded by Dan Klein. And if we could do a roll call.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yeah.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. And I will ask for us to be adjourned. And after that, if we could plan on meeting back at 8 p.m. If I could have a mover for us to be adjourned?
No.
No, you don't want to.
No, we don't.
Sorry about that.
Just take a recess.
If we could take a recess then. We will plan on meeting back at 8 p.m.
Should I stay, Shauna? Or Jason?
No, you can leave. Thank you, Rick.
Okay, thank you.
Good night, Rick.
Good night.